Hello and welcome to the Writer's Block. Yes, it's the Writer's Block. It's Sunday evening. It's 10 p.m. here in lovely Skopje, Macedonia. It's nice and dark outside. It's nice and dark inside. I only got my lonely light and the screens of the many computers surrounding me here at Writer's Block headquarters. And we are here today with Mr. Bo Albrecht, a writer for Countercurrents, but also for Return of Kings, Once Upon a Time. And we are going to do something different today. We are we usually discuss a single work or maybe a theme, but today we are discussing a whole slew of articles which were published on countercurrents.com, the University of the Dissident Right, the webzine with where you can come to get all of your biggest brains takes on the dissident right. We are doing a month in review. The month of September, well, we added a lot of articles, many of them very fun, some of them crucial to our thinking as dissident rightists. But first of all, let's introduce Bo Albrecht. Bo, introduce yourself to the crowd in case they haven't heard of you.
Greetings, everybody. I'm Bo. I write for Countercurrents, formerly for Return of Kings. I also write a lot of bad science fiction and science fantasy.
Right. Well, I read a little bit of it, and it's not that bad. Now, you used to write for Return of Kings. For those of you who may not know, that used to be, I believe, Roosh V's website. What happened to that project?
Well, he decided he had a change of direction in his life. He's got religion now. Mm. Deep into Eastern Orthodoxy.
Right.
And chasing women was not something he wanted to do anymore.
That's very interesting. It's very anticlimactic finish to the character arc, but who knows? You know, the Roosh redemption arc might prove to be even more rewarding than that. And of course, we have our loyal viewers today. We have our moderators. They are absolutely dominating the chat from what I can tell. Now, don't forget, people, if you want to ask me or Bo a question, or, you know, God forbid, both of us, if you want both of us to ask your question, you're going to have to write in one of those entropy super chats, the beautiful ones which carry money with them. We are having a fundraiser at Countercurrents. We need money to keep the lights on. We need money to keep me in ill-fitting shirts and bad ties. So get to it. Get your questions here. Get your answers here. You got some two very big brains at your disposal, and I invite you to pick them. And if the mods would be so kind as to dump the link to the Entropy Super Chats. Now, it will say that we are not streaming because we're not streaming on Entropy. We are, however, streaming on DLive and Countercurrents, and we are here to answer your questions, among other things. But before we answer any questions, we are going to discuss a very important article, which was written by Bo Albrecht this month for Countercurrents. It concerns David Duke's autobiography, My Awakening, which Bo has described as a bottle of red pills. Take it away, kind sir.
All right, so the book was written quite a while ago, back in the late 90s. But really, it's very relevant now, even in the first edition. It's come out of another edition. I haven't gotten to see that yet, but I tell you, he's really spot on. It's an easier thing back then. They're still applying now.
Yeah. It is very interesting because David Duke, I came a little late to this movement. You could say 2017, I dipped my toe in. At the beginning of 2018, you could say I became fully red-pilled. But the man himself, he's been at this for, well, longer than I've been around. I'll be turning 30, notoriously, on November the 29th. And he's been doing this for longer than I've, been even alive. That's amazing. He could see a lot of the problems we are having a mile away. He could see them even back then when everyone was sleeping. which, you know, leads me to believe, were they ever really hidden from the public? Was the public just too complacent to see?
Well, there's been a lot of propaganda to distract us into other things. Not worry about our future, not worry who's the man behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm. You think that's the whole of it? You don't think that maybe there is something to most people which is innate, which does not allow them to, see the big things, the big movements? Maybe they're just too concerned with their own everyday concerns, you know?
Well, everybody's got their eyes glued to the television set all the time. You know, that's going to tell us.
Mm-hmm. Well, theoretically, people should be well informed. But now we are seeing, especially, you know, with the coronavirus panic, that people who read television, who watch television, who read newspapers, the quote unquote best informed, are actually the worst informed. They actually have the worst data, the worst idea of what the world is really like. So maybe it's a massive misinformation campaign going on. Tell me, you know, what is really your impression from David Duke's work? Would you recommend it to, you know, say a friend, a family member who needs red pilling?
Well, certainly it's written for introductory level to ease people into these ideas.
Mm-hmm. So basically the notorious David Duke is actually very normie friendly. He's writing at an introductory level, is what you're trying to tell me.
That's correct.
Mm. That's all very interesting. But he does not pull his punches. He does not dilute his message in any way. Because from what I understood from your review, now I have not read his book, he devotes quite a large portion of it to, you know, the big bugaboo of the Jewish question.
Yeah, that was a large part of it.
Yeah. Because, you know, see, conventional wisdom says do not try to foist the Jewish question immediately on, you know, friends and family. Yet here we have something which is, well, supposed to be introductory level, but it's got this huge section on the JQ in it. How do we square that circle?
Well, I'd have to think about that one, but I just say that he sort of describes the process of his own discovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how he discovered the truth of race, and then found out that a group of individuals was pushing certain leftist trends. I hate to say it, but I really wish they'd just stopped doing that. We could all get along so much better.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Yeah, Bo has been accused of being quote-unquote soft on the JQ, but I don't think he's soft on the JQ at all. In fact, I think he's quite realistic on it. We should not be too spurgy about that particular question, but we should not ignore it either. Now, any other impressions you've had of Dr. Duke's book, and is it still relevant, you know, all these years afterwards?
I find largely it is relevant.
Mm-hmm. And,
I can't think of anything that's really gone out of relevance. As far as new developments that have gone on, there have been a few, but not enough to really spoil the book.
Mm-hmm. That's I don't think anyone can, because even though we may not have read the book, I think we all exist more or less in its intellectual shadow. You know how mountains cast rain shadows, how things cast shadows. I think that David Duke is one of these people. He's been around forever. I caught some of his live streams with JF back when he was still appearing on JF's show. And he has some very good tips on bodybuilding and how to keep yourself fit and diet, especially. You know, his lines of on collagen. He's a very big fan of collagen. It's what keeps your bones intact. It's what allows your binding tissue to regenerate after if it is spent. And believe you me, it gets spent very often if you're exercising very intensely. So I want to thank Dr. David Duke for that. Even though he cut into the writer's block time last week when he overstepped his slot on Patriotic Alternative on Patriotic Weekly Review. Naughty, naughty Dr. David Duke. But I want to thank him for, well, the workout and diet tips he gave me. So he's just one of these giants on whose shoulders we all stand. And that's, I think, all I have to say about Dr. David Duke's My Awakening. Bo, do you have anything to add? Has Dr. David Duke changed your life in some way?
Well, I must say he was an inspiration way back when, back in the wilderness of the 80s when there really wasn't much of a distant movement out there. And there were very few people. He was one of them.
The 80s. I've heard of the 80s, but I've never seen them myself. I'm going to have to check on that. It sounds like a lovely ancient time.
Pretty ancient.
Yeah, I believe that was the time when you all rode around on dinosaurs. That's my impression of it. People talk about the 80s like it was yesterday, but it was actually a very, very long time ago. Not a single person born in the 80s is younger than 30. So that's something to contemplate, but something maybe that should be discussed at a different time, because we have a show to run, and people, we are having a fundraiser for Countercurrents. So this is your chance to ask me and Mr. Albrecht questions through Entropy. And we are also, of course, accepting donations through DLive, the various lemons and ice creams and ninjas and ninja genies and ninja whatevers. We are accepting donations through both channels. So please do not be stingy with them. And we have Slog breaking the ice on DLive with 14 lemons. Now that could be a number of some significance. I wonder if it's part of one conceptual whole. I wonder if there's a second half following it. I'm going to have to think about this. Now, speaking of donations, speaking of filthy lucre resulting from the distant right, what I am sipping on here tonight is Alaska Chaga. And we have Alaska Chaga in the chat, I believe. He has the Alaska Chaga company has graciously donated a bunch of Alaska Chaga teats to keep me well antioxidized and let's just say in good health. And let me say, I was not a big believer in Alaska Chaga. I mean, it's like in a mushroom they scrape off of some sort of rock in Alaska. And it's supposed to have antioxidants. Now, I don't know what those things are or how they work, but I do know that after sipping Alaska Chaga tea for the first time, I had like 12 hours of continuous deep sleep, which I haven't had for a very long time. I don't think I've had a sleep that deep, since, 2019, to be honest. And so if it can do that to me, it can probably do that for you. So if you're skimping on the sleep quality, that's something you should consider. You should consider purchasing Alaska Chaga. And it is also good to know he is one of us. He is also someone of dissident temperament. And we should, of course, do business with our people. And he was also nice enough to send me Alaska Chaga soap. So that mushroom thing he puts in the tea, he has found ways to put it in a bar of soap. Now, I've yet to test this thing, but it smells divine. It's wonderful. So anyways, I think we have discussed.
I see why you said perky.
What?
I see why you said perky.
I'm sorry, I did not catch that, Bo.
That tea must be making you all perky and stuff.
Yeah, I'm all perky and chirpy. It's like, I don't know what's in those mushrooms, but it's good, man. It's good.
Now walking we on have... sunshine. You're walking on sunshine.
Yeah, no, I'm actually sitting on a well-made Danish chair, but the sensation is noted. We are of course, discussed it. We are having a month in review for countercurrents.com, and I exercised some editorial discretion in selecting these articles, not only the popular ones, but also the ones which I believe are impactful, which will be with us when all is said and done and everything is... When the dusts of time, they settle down, when the sands of time, they turn into glass, or whatever metaphor you prefer, I think that these articles will stand a little bit of the test of time. So let's move on to Trevor Lynch's review of The Incredibles and The Incredibles 2. Now, Bo, have you had a chance to read that review?
I didn't. I actually watched the first movie just for this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember watching the first Incredibles movie when I was younger. No, I wasn't that young. I was probably 12 or 13, but it was still, you know, a good heroic story that, you know, you could spend an hour and a half on it, chewing on it. And then my kid cousin, he had a DVD of it, so anytime he was over, he would play it and we would enjoy this film. And I don't know, all these years on, I keep thinking, and maybe Mr. Incredible is fighting to save us in that film from the world of today. Because what is it? It's a story of a blonde traditional family where the man works and the wife takes care of the children. They got three kids. They're all white, and they're fighting against a dweeby technocratic oligarch. Someone who seeks to rule the world through technological superiority and by denigrating and diluting innate ability. Now, I'm thinking, if you watched The Incredibles as a kid and you rooted for Syndrome, you're probably some sort of globalist bugman, is what I'm thinking. And Mr. Incredible, in that film, in the first film, is fighting, well, a representation of what our enemies are as dissident rightists today. Globalist techno-oligarchs who do not recognize innate ability or actively hate it as a fact of life. Bo, have you any thoughts on the subject?
Well, I tell you what, I'm not inclined to read too much into it, but I do notice that we have an intact family, three kids. How often do you see that?
And they're all white. Man is
not
white.
The last time we saw that was The Simpsons, right?
Right, right. And though they were not exactly someone to look up to. See, that's the thing.
No, not The Simpsons.
Yeah. Bob Parfitt. Yeah. You know, when you think about it, Homer Simpson was basically a ritual humiliation of white men every evening as that show was aired, as is, you know, from South Park, Randy Marsh or Peter Griffin. I remember, maybe a couple of years ago, I was watching Married with Children, another one from the 80s, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, this guy, this Al Bundy character, why is he on the screen? So he can be ritualistically humiliated every week? Why? And when you think about it, at least Al Bundy, every once in a while, was allowed not to win, not to fight back, but to get a rhetorical flourish in on the enemy. But and Al Bundy was the last man on television allowed to genuinely speak, last white man on television allowed to speak his mind. And ever since, we've only really gotten bumbling representations of white men meant to humiliate us, meant to pathologize being a father, pathologize being a husband. And Bob Parr in The Incredibles isn't actually a refreshing respite from all of that. You can think of Bob Parr as a normal human being, ironically, as a normal guy in his 40s trying his best for his family. You do not see him as this cartoonish, oafish, well, bumbling creature which you cannot respect.
I can kind of relate to him in a certain way.
Mm. Yeah,
See,
me too.
yeah, he's stuck in this dead-end job in the insurance industry, right? And what he's supposed to do is deny all these claims. Well, no, he wants to play it straight. He's stuck with all the bureaucracy. Doesn't like it one bit. I can relate.
I can certainly relate, having worked in the insurance industry myself, and it's soul-crushing experience. It really is. And I too do not fit well into small automobiles, just like him. But of course, I lack the super strength, so that's a bummer. That's an interesting that's a film, but the second one, they absolutely ruined the second one. I mean, it's so forgettable, first and foremost. I remember most of the on the Incredibles. I remember almost nothing of the Incredibles 2, not even who the major villain was. It was just a bad movie which you did not want to watch. I do remember that they shoehorned feminism into it. They somehow did that as well. So
Feminism.
it are so once again we are returning to things of our past which are surprisingly relevant in the year 2021. It would appear our world hasn't changed much in the well, since the 80s maybe.
Well, in
Do you
certain
think
ways,
that?
it's we had a halfway normal country back then. We barely have a normal country now. Speaking of the USA, of course, for me.
Yeah, I mean, things are nowhere near normal in Europe either. People are always saying, oh, you're in Eastern Europe, things are better there. No, they're not. No, they're not. Communism really did a number on us, and now Western liberalism is coming for us, which might prove to be worse than communism. So that's something to think about.
Solzhenitsyn mentioned that there's liquid manure was able to get under the Iron Curtain and splash of eastward. Solzhenitsyn, he's mentioning the liquid manure sort of running through the Iron Curtain.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they should that should have built the curtain higher. Maybe it should they shouldn't have busted down that wall, but maybe that wall was to protect us from the real communists on the other side. That's something to keep in mind, I guess. We have our first donation, our first entropy donation of the night from Reed Johnson, who donates $10 and says, thanks, just thanks, for providing a place to keep the flame of white culture and sophistication going. Wherever we're all headed, we're headed there together. I just hope we make our ancestors proud. Well, I salute you, Mr. Johnson. I certainly hope I can make my ancestors proud. I hope they're proud right now. But we'll see. We'll see. It's very important that we win. It's very important that we survive as a race, it survived as a people, and your words give me courage that it will be okay. As long as there are men like you, we can keep this thing going. And yeah, this is I do think of the writer's block as a place where we can revive the old salon culture. You know, we are where we can hash out ideas, where we can hash out strategies for survival, for fighting back against our enemies, or we can even just sometimes provide comfort and absolution for the people listening to us, because then I've grown to liken my position as a dissident content creator to basically a priest. You know, says people are confused and they're unsure about the future. So they come to us for reassurance. They come to us for wisdom. Now, we don't always offer reassurance. Sometimes we have to offer hard truths, but we are in a priestly role. And sometimes, you know, you got to just give communion and hope for the best. You got an opinion on that, Bo?
I agreed with the sentiments, and I'd like to thank our contributor here.
That's good to know. We have yet another donation, this time on DLive, from Gadius Maximus, who has donated one Ninja Genie. Nix has optics engaged today with the shirt and tie. Well, thank you, sir. It is finally getting cold enough here for the shirt and tie combinations. I'm no longer going to do the short-sleeved pearl buttoned summer shirt thing. I have a wonderful combination of shirts and ties I have not worn since the time that I was an attorney. And, well, it's the good news. They still fit me. That was something I was not sure about. Well, if Bo, I think we exhausted the subject of the Incredibles review, unless you have anything to add.
I'm going to say that scene where he threw the boxer half a dozen balls, oh, that was epic.
I'm sorry?
All right, you remember the scene where the hero throws his boss through half a dozen walls.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, he throws the boss, okay?
That was something else.
That is something which I wished I could do many times back during the days of my employment. That was an interesting scene, is all I'm going to say. Of course, man can only dream. For the time being, we are not to engage in any illegal activity. And yes, this is my professional legal opinion, people. Throwing your boss to multiple cubicle walls is illegal, so don't do it. I think we can move on. Now, we have an article here on our list from good friend of this show and lovely lady, Catherine S. And it's called Let Him Stand, and it concerns the statue of General Lee in Virginia. But not only the statue of General Lee in Virginia, but she actually paints a wonderful picture what it's like to be in Virginia, because it's related to her very own experience of Virginia, where she used to live. Now, Catherine, of course, is a born and bred Southerner, so the way she sees Virginia could be very different from what an outsider could see. But personally, this is one of my favorite articles I've, you know, for this month, but also in general, because it does something. It reminds me a little bit of my friend and former co-host Full Moon Ancestry, the way he used to write, because he would relate to a place through his own personal experience, just like Catherine. Bo, did you have a chance to read this article by Catherine?
That I did. That was some very vivid imagery. Mm. She really made it come alive.
It really is amazing. It's, I would actually recommend this as reading, not only if you want to learn about Virginia, not only if you want to learn about General Lee and the sort of man he was, but if you're a, you know, beginner writer, or even a mature and experienced writer, read this and learn how to write from it. Learn from it. This is an amazing piece of prose here, which is written. Just the beauty of the prose is amazing to me. That's what stands out of it. I mean, just take a, it's a little on the longish side, 3,353 words, but you brew a big pot of coffee, you get your favorite thing to snack coffee with, and start reading this thing. When you finish, you will know what I was talking about. It's even got a touch of the old Southern Gothic to it, a little touch of the heavens being a little angry at man for his trespasses when the James River goes a little nuts towards the end, from what I understand. Yes. Bo, I mean, and not just the imagery, the pacing, the everything. Have you anything to add to that?
One thing I got to say, is the people who just live in the cities and never get it to go to the countryside and see those things, they are really missing something.
Yeah.
I got to feel sorry for all the bug men.
Yeah. Some of us city slickers, we need to move into the we need to go into the countryside often to recharge our batteries, because the city is just It's just an exhausting place to be, I must say. Just
But
to
I've been
live
to
here.
cool cities there, right? Skopje, I've never been there, but I'd imagine it's really a sight to see.
It is. And sometimes I have trouble relating to people in the West who say things like, "Oh, abandon the cities. The cities cannot be saved." Because for all of its faults, Skopje is still majority white, majority Macedonian, and it's crime-free, relatively clean, cleaner than Paris. Last time I went to Paris, and last time I went to Paris was 2012. I can only imagine what it looks like now. So, and of course, it's also my hometown. It's where I was born and raised. So, just this notion of me leaving the place where I was born and raised. And why? Because so no, the city is degenerate. Well, okay, then I'm a degenerate because I love the city. But if you think about it, when you go to a Western city, when you see just the all of the criminal diversity on the streets, all the garbage, all of the stench of the refuse of humanity just gathering. Of course, I'm describing my trips to Paris here. It really puts things into perspective for me why dissidents in the West are so reluctant to live in cities. But I will say, even if the city is beautiful and livable and pleasant, I think it still exhausts the human psyche. I think that concrete in particular exhausts the eye, and it's difficult to live among. And this is why people who live in cities should retreat at least once a week to the countryside to recharge their batteries if they can.
It is always good out to get out, get some fresh air and sunshine.
Yes, that is exactly true. And I've been doing exactly that all day before this show. Let me just check the donations. Bo, if you have any thoughts, please share them with the audience.
First, what do you think about those who say we got to abandon cities? I don't know. I think the time is, to run away is ended. We can't do that anymore. Been doing that
Right,
too much.
I'm gonna have to agree with that. Now, they will
Been
come
running
for
since
us
the
in the
60s. How far did that get us?
And they're going to come for us eventually, even out in the countryside there. And it might, however, be wise to regroup if you are in immediate danger from the diversity or the just mismanagement of cities. That might be a good idea. But leaving the cities if you don't have to, I don't think it's a luxury we're entitled to have. That's not. And of course, Bo, I forgot to ask, are you a proud son of the South?
I've been in the South for quite some time, but I kind of been moving around here and there.
Have you seen and do you feel comedy with General Lee, and have you seen his statue perhaps before they tore it down?
Not the one that is described in the article.
But there are, of course, many, many statues of General Lee dotted all around the American South. I understand he is kind of like your Alexander, I believe.
Indeed.
We
So after the Civil War, sort of the deal was that the Southerners would agree, hey, we're Americans now, but we can still celebrate the heritage that we had during those the years of secession. And that's sort of been an unspoken agreement, and that's been reneged on.
Well, you have to respect the courage of the people who fought. I mean, even if they were enemies, even if they were mortal enemies, soldiers who fought, bled, showed courage, showed valor. I mean, Rush would say, I guess, game respects game. So it's not a, it's not, it's unmartial. It's dishonorable to destroy monuments of for soldiers, even if they were enemy soldiers. There is a, I mean, this is probably reflective of the fact that our countries and our governments are being taken over by non-whites. I don't think the non-white races have a sense of chivalry and a sense of respect for fallen enemies, even.
I think the Chinese might, but I can't really think of anybody else.
I'm not sure Chinese history knows of examples
No.
of respect for, I mean, there is no chivalry as we understand it among the Chinese. They really are deceitful people. We did an entire stream on with Dr. Ricardo Duchesne and Hoppe Perspective on this subject about just how, well, different from us the Chinese are, and mostly in negative ways. So I'm not sure. I mean, of course, my Chinese history could be shoddy, but I don't think they have a concept of chivalry, anything resembling the Western concept of chivalry. In fact, I think the only non-Western people who have something like that is, are, well, the Japanese. And we keep coming back to the question of, are the Japanese honorary, I guess. And maybe the Arabs made them, but maybe there is a Muslim equivalent, but they are very big on taqiyya, on deception. So it's important not to get taken in by their deceptions. That's something to think about.
Well, they're actually pretty straightforward. They don't like you. Yeah, they're going to stab you in the front. And instead of some other folks, you might just pretend to be your friends and then stab you in the back.
Yeah, there's a, although, I mean, there is a long history of Arab deception and use of deception in warfare dating back all the way back to Muhammad. He was the one who said warfare is based on deception. There
Sun
is a
Tzu.
yeah.
Sun Tzu from China.
Reality of
Came
it
to the same
is,
conclusion.
reality of it is, probably is genuinely based on deception. And I believe it was one of your Marine generals in America who said it, "I never want my boys in a fair fight," right?
I haven't heard that one, but I can believe
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. It is, I guess, part of the Marine mindset that preparation is more important than the actual, I believe, act of fighting. Or who knows? Maybe I should have Marines on to discuss this. Well, anyways, I think we have exhausted that subject. You have anything to add as a finishing touch to that?
Again, I would say it's a great article, and I agree with you on that.
Well, it's good if we can agree on that. We have now a hot one from James Dunphy, a white nationalist take on 9/11. It's retrospective of September of 11th. And of course, the month of September used to be consumed by memorials for 9/11 way back in the long, long time ago. But now it's gone, well, oh, not with a bang, but with a whimper. It's come and gone, even though it's been 20 years since this attack on the Twin Towers. And it's been, it followed the frankly embarrassing retreat of America from Afghanistan, with all of the speculation which followed it. And of course, I wrote extensively about the geopolitical implications of that, about the implications for the American empire from the retreat from Afghanistan. And that's the that was just followed by it was I believe one of those things, one of those events where you know how they say politics, nothing happens historically for years and then years happen in weeks. That was one of those things. It was one of those occurrences. And it's important that we have a position as a movement, as white nationalists. I don't know if you consider yourself a white nationalist, Bo. I certainly do. I mean, they're going to call me one anyway, so I might as well wear the shoe. That's
well, they can all call me anything they want. I'm sure it's true.
Yeah, it's probably true on some level. I mean, I am white. I am a nationalist. Well, you know, Varg would disagree about my whiteness, but, you know, that's Varg.
Oh, well,
we all love him.
I'm not going to split hairs like that.
He is a big friend of the show, Hopper Perspective. He described him like as the crazy uncle that everyone nevertheless loves. You know, and that's the thing. You know, you follow Varg, and even though he called me non-white on Twitter and was very rude to me at that time, I can't help but liking him. It's just because he's living the dream. He's out there in the wilderness. He's got his six kids. He's living his best life, as the woke would put it. And, well, anyways, we were discussing the white nationalist take on 9/11. So it's an excellent summation of basically all that we can verify as white nationalists with regard to that event. Now, Bo, have you any opinions of your own about 9/11? Do you think it was, what do you think happened that day?
All right, there's been all sorts of speculation here and there. I believe it was the Arabs. Were there people who knew things about what they were doing ahead of time? Possibly.
I'm sorry?
And possibly didn't share that with us, which they should have, but they didn't. But hard to say for certain. I haven't really looked into it too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, for my part, I mean, you got to think about the incredibly low probability of an event such as this occurring. It is possible that elements within the Department of Defense and of course the State of Israel orchestrated this thing. No, I'm not saying the steel beams thing. I think that airplanes actually flew into these buildings, but for NORAD to be AWOL specifically on the day of the hijackings, it shows that someone wanted this thing to happen, and not just the terrorist. And that's not even getting into the whole dancing Israelis things, which, I mean, I guess dance parties are not illegal, not in Jersey at least. But then, yeah, there you have it. Of course, you have the other aspect of which is, you know, you have Invade the World, right, which was the war in Afghanistan. We know how that ended. Just have Invite the World, that very same world you are invading. Okay, let's invite it.
I even wrote about that once. Bomb the world, invade the world, or invite the world.
Yeah, invade the world, invite the world. I believe that who came up with it? Was it Jared Taylor? Was it Sam Francis? Maybe. But it is the American foreign policy, has been for 30 years, for as long as I've been. Well, maybe more than that. Fling open the borders to everyone who wants to come in, but bomb their cousins and uncles and brothers overseas. And that's a wonderful recipe for success. I guess if you don't have enough domestic resentment to gin up and milk it for your subversive and dissolutive agendas, you're going to have to import it. I guess it's one of those creative solutions to a problem.
Oh, yes. Well, as far as getting to who done what, I kind of got to apply Occam's razor here, right? So are you going to get 19 Arabs to fly planes into buildings so they can get their 72 virgins in heaven, or are you going to get the 19 Arabs to do that just so the Dick Cheney can get more power?
Well, why not both? Well, I mean, I don't think that the 72 virgins care a bag of beans whether Dick Cheney's friends in Halliburton can fill their coffers, or whether deep state can implement the Patriot Act, establish a domestic surveillance state, the likes of which the world has never seen before the rise of Chairman Xi Jinping, and that is I believe those two goals are not mutually incompatible. And of
Well,
course,
there's
as
again an
we
expression by a fellow named Rahm Emanuel, one of Obama's friends. He said, "Never let a good crisis go to waste."
Yes, and he was, I believe, quoting Saul Alinsky, another one of Obama's very good friends. So there's something to think about. There is something to think about. And neoconservatism drinking from the same trough and, as we say in Macedonia, farting into the same pumpkin as the liberals. So that is very illustrative. As of course, as white nationalist, as dissident rightist, we should have a position on the on this momentous event and its implications for the white race and for America and for the European countries. I believe it's best summarized as it was a failure of leadership, it was a failure of defense, it was directly or indirectly caused by American support for Israel, which should not continue. And many of the problems related to 9/11, let's not forget that all of the hijackers, they had residencies, many of them had been educated at American universities, would have been solved not only by NORAD not going to sleep, but by a sane and non-self-destructive immigration policy into the West. So skepticism of support for Israel and strong borders, those would have prevented 9/11. Those would have prevented many other problems in America. But it's important to have a position, something you can say to someone asking you, what's your take on 9/11? Well, we shouldn't have let that given those guys residencies. We shouldn't have let them become be educated at American universities, and
Yeah,
we
they did
shouldn't
belong
have.
here. Yeah, those guys didn't belong here.
Right,
They
and
don't fit in.
we should not have given them a casus belli by interfering in the Middle East, by propping us this Jewish state in the Middle East, but we should not be debasing our own countries even as we are propping up a literal ethno state in the Middle East. That's I believe the most succinct I can put the white nationalist take on 9/11 as described in James Dunphy's excellent article on that subject. Bo, have you anything else to add to that?
Well, nothing further.
Well, that is okay. That is fine by me. We have a donation from Alyaska Chaga. Now, I said it again. I'll say it. I'll said it before. I'll say it again. Sorry, having trouble speaking today. I'm drinking the wonderful Alyaska Chaga tea. It's refreshing, it's restorative, it's actually pretty tasty as well. And of course, Alaska Chaga was kind enough to send me a bag of his, a box, actually, a box full of his product to sample for the glory of the writer's block. And I'm eternally grateful for that. My bowels have been moving very regularly since I started drinking Alaska Chaga tea. And of course, he sent me Alaska Chaga soap. Now, oh, I'm assuming you're a dude, Alaska Chaga, if you don't mind. I will assume your gender. I'm a shitlord like that. Now, the soap I have not tried yet. In fact, I have not even gotten it out of the box yet, but it smells absolutely divine. And from what I understand, it won't be available for purchase on the Alaska Chaga website for some time now. But yeah. I wish I could transmit smell, but it's got chunks of the chaga mushroom right in there, and I'm sure that the restorative effects of the Alaska chaga tea on the bowel and the brain and all of the other parts of the body will be replicated with the Alaska chaga soap on the skin. Now, skin is the biggest organ of your body, one of the most important. And you got to take care of it. I never use store-bought, what you might call them, shampoos and bathing soaps. I only use organic, and that is, that and good genes are the reason I'm so handsome. And of course, the fact of the matter is, I feel a film of some slimy, disgusting substance on my skin and hair every time I use one of those mass-produced chemical monstrosities they call shampoos and soaps. So I try to not do that. And that's my shilling of products. Of course, we are having a fundraiser for Countercurrents people. I want you to donate money. I want you to donate lemons on DLive too. That's always fun. You can donate lemons, ice creams, ninjas, ninja genies, ninjets, ninja this, ninja that. Just keep them pouring. And of course, on Entropy Stream, just if our hardworking moderators could put the link in the chats, and you can ask me questions, you can ask Bo questions, or you can just support Countercurrents without the need to ask any questions. That goes too. That's also valid. So would you please do that, people, because we are trying to keep the lights on here and they're already flickering. We have a very ambitious fundraising goal for this year. We have donations. We do have donations. My shilling has paid off. Norse Nature has donated 2 ice creams. And we thank you for that, Norse Nature. We salute you. We have Gaudius Maximus donating an ice cream. This is all over on DLive. And four lemons. Now, one ice cream, that makes 10 lemons. So that's a total of 14 lemons. Again, that number. What does it mean? Could it be half of a conceptual whole and that the other half will be forthcoming very soon? We can only hope. Only way to answer the mystery. Well, while I'm trying to puzzle that out, while I'm trying to think of whatever could that number 14 mean, let's look at what else we have slated for our discussion here. We have from Robert Hampton, the abortion fight returns. Now, Mr. Hampton here takes the position that, well, abortion is not really our fight as dissident right is. The mainstream right is very focused on abortion. It's one of the few areas where they have a tangible goal, the overturning of Roe versus Wade in America. But should this be important to us as a dissident right movement? Mr. Hampton disagrees. He thinks that Roe versus Wade, or the heartbeat bill in Texas, and of course, for those of you who have not been following the news, there's been a new law in Texas which prohibits abortion after a certain date. But Mr. Hampton thinks that banning abortion doesn't advance our core issues and even hurts them in some ways. Now, Bo, that's a very controversial position to take on the right. What's your opinion on it?
My take is that this could end up being a wedge, and not in a good way for us.
It's going to be a wedge?
Yes, divisive.
Divisive is, you think it's divisive?
If you take
divisive?
A stand, you're going to turn off people, no matter one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. So we should, as dissidents, avoid this issue, you think?
I think we should best make up our own minds on it. I have my opinions on it.
Now, of course,
the Supreme Court decision was a bad one. It never should be made. It should be a matter of state law. That's where I'll go with it. I've actually read that Roe versus Wade decision. In the middle of it is just postmodernism.
You think
it doesn't really have to do with the Constitution.
The reasoning, you think, makes no sense constitutionally speaking.
The Constitution does not speak to it.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, according to our 10th Amendment, that's one of the things that are to be made up, law that's made up by the states.
That sounds actually right.
The Supreme Court says that whatever we say is what the Constitution is.
That really gets us into the question of what is the Constitution? If the Constitution can be so easily overridden by postmodern bullshit by the Supreme Court. And of course, I mean, I've not read Roe versus Wade, but I have no doubt it's postmodern bullshit. You got to ask yourself, then what good is the Constitution if it can be overridden by just judicial fiat?
So early on, there was a decision, Marbury versus Madison, way long ago, said that the Supreme Court has the ultimate interpretive powers. And for the most part, the courts did not abuse this power that they granted themselves. But since the Warren Court back in the 60s, maybe slightly before, 50s, and ever since then, they just make up things as they go, whatever their personal politics.
So we are essentially in territory in America, well, heretofore uncharted territory, where the courts are just unstoppable.
It's been that way for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I've been around.
Well, then we got to ask ourselves, what is the meaning of law if it can be just interpreted against us? Against reason itself, and you know why? Then we have to understand that we're not ruled by laws; we are ruled by men, the men of the Supreme Court, and what they decide is essentially the law. The Constitution has no value, has no meaning, essentially.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah, that's is something. That is something to chew on.
That's how they got so many other wonderful decisions, Brown versus Board of Education. You heard of that one, right?
No, red pill me on Brown versus Board of Education.
Okay, so that's like mid-1950s where they decided that they can't have segregation in school anymore. Mm-hmm. And they used this study about dolls to make their decision.
A study about dolls?
Yes, a study about dolls.
What did the study about dolls say?
Oh, the black girls wanted white dolls, and therefore we got to integrate education because they're like missing out on us. Something to that effect.
Well, couldn't it be that the black girls wanted white dolls because, well, white dolls, like white women, are pretty, and unlike black women and black dolls, if I may be so bold.
Well, I guess the court didn't think of that angle.
Yeah, see, you got to get a slightly chauvinistic Eastern European on the court then, because you got to think of these things like, what do women think like? When women buy a doll, they're essentially purchasing either an avatar of themselves. You know, when you buy a doll for a little girl, and of course, I'm a little weird like this about dolls. I've used this as a conceptual aid in a previous article on Pine, which is about playing dress up. And I've commented that when you buy dolls for girls, you're either buying for them an avatar of themselves or an avatar of a future child they're going to have. So, yeah. This is why, for example, I don't like Barbies, because I think they engender narcissism in little girls. And of course, Barbie is comparatively tame to the kinds of dolls that, you know, little girls are getting these days. You know, a friend of mine, he has young girls, young daughters, and he gets them Bratz dolls, which are coarse. You look at them and they're like,
I've seen them.
The girls
are like really turtled up. Anybody who hasn't seen those?
Yeah. I mean, if a girl dressed in my school when I was growing up like that, when I was a teenager in the early 2000s, we'd call her a whore, and all the guys would proposition her, you know, and probably get some, you know, the school bicycle, essentially. So that's basically when you're purchasing a doll. And this is why I don't like dolls which are presented as self-image to little girls. It is better that little girls get dolls which represent babies, you know. And I have a doll here which is a little antique. It could be from the 70s, I think, but it's soft. It's shaped like a woman, but it has relative to a little girl, the proportions that a baby would have to an adult woman. And because of this, and because it's soft, and because, you know, soft to the touch, it's not plastic, I think it is, as a toy, conceptually meant to train little girls for motherhood, whereas Barbies and Bratz are just, toys which are meant to engender narcissism in little girls. Narcissism and whoredom, but they are the same thing in a woman, so let's just go with narcissism. We were talking about the courts, we were talking about judiciary, we were talking about abortion. Now, Albrecht, a lot of people on the dissident right will point out that the vast number of abortions, at least the majority, are had by Black and Hispanic women. And had it not been for abortion, no, we would have a bigger demographic problems than we do now in the West. And of course, the old racist joke is, what do you call a Black woman who gets an abortion? A crime stopper. And that is, I believe, undoubtedly so. But can we still, as dissident rightists, oppose abortion?
Well, you're saying something bad, that we have this sense of chivalry that other people don't, right? Mm-hmm. Now, so I got to say, there's right ways and wrong ways to have population control, and killing the babies is not the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if we take away financial incentives, that'd be another matter, okay?
But let's say financial incentives and, you know, throwing the bums out are out of the question. Should we nevertheless abjure this weapon? You know, against, well, it's not even a weapon. You know, it's not something we wield, not something we direct. Should we still struggle against this one factor, which is actually mitigating the demographic disaster?
Again, there's right ways and wrong ways to achieve certain objectives.
Mm-hmm. This is
my opinion, and that's it. And I'm sure there will be those who disagree with me and tell me I'm the biggest fool in the world. Okay, that's fine. See, did I mention this is divisive?
All right, it is divisive. Yeah, it's personally, I hold the opposite opinion. I mean, in my view, it's like, it's a baby, it's a child, but if it grows up, it's going to be a great big thug who's going to steal from white people, kill white people, rape white women, get them while they're young, as they always say. But that's...
Why not move them into their own territory instead?
If only.
That's the right way to do it.
If only. But that is not something we can do right now, nor is it inevitable, nor is it something which could be. We're not even in a position to contemplate this. We can only, at this point, dream. That is the majority view, I think. I believe I have the majority view on the dissident right, but there is something to be said about the European sense of chivalry. You do not act so much chivalrously towards other races because you believe they will reciprocate. They will not. But you do it for other white people because other white people will not stand behind a brute. They will not support a brute. So that is something to keep in mind for the... And of course, I believe that opposing abortion in America is something which conservative white people do. Am I wrong?
Well, I tell you what, you see my avatar, that's Pinochet, right? Well, even mm-hmm. I have my limits, all right? What can I say?
Yeah. Well, Pinochet was not exactly some bloody dictator. Most of the people he liquidated were actual criminals, and not just in the sense that they had an opinion, which they held an ideology which was opposed to the state of Chile, but no, they were killers, they were weapon smugglers, they were destroyers of property, some of them. They were insurrectionists, seditious terrorists who wanted to overthrow the Chilean state. So Pinochet did not really kill many people we would call innocent. And So he was not a particularly bloody man. That goes to show that you can actually run a counter-revolution with very few casualties, with very comparatively little blood. The general actually showed us that.
Well, personally, I'd rather not hurt anybody, okay?
That is, I believe, the Platonic ideal. I think the Chinese have this ideal of winning a war without battle. Now, of course, in practice, nothing is going to look like the Platonic ideal. So,
indeed.
There is something to be, that is something to think about. And we have, I don't believe I read out the first one. Oh, I did. Alaska Chaga, one diamond and yet and another diamond from Alaska Chaga. Well, thank you for that, sir. Thank you for your donations. You are helping us keep the lights on here at Countercurrents. You're contributing to our fundraiser. Now you can, of course, elect to ask questions as well. I suggest you avail yourself of that ability because, well, what can I say? I'm feeling particularly generous tonight. And I think... abortion. Yeah, it's one of those wedge they don't call it a wedge issue for nothing. They can ruin your family dinner. They can ruin a nice day at the park. You start thinking about dead babies but it is something someone's got to think about babies and then ultimately killing them, I think. So it's good to have a position on them. It's good to hash out these differences. Before they
arise. Well, let's just do all that. That's your fun activity to do, right?
Fun. I'm sorry, I did not catch that.
Oh, well, to the left is that for me to think some sliced bread, isn't it? So, they can go support all that.
And the leftist sliced bread? I'm sorry, I did not catch that.
Oh, figure of speech. They think it's for me to think some sliced bread.
Abortion?
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful.
Well,
to them,
I'm sure it is. There are some studies that people with non-functional amygdala, which includes a lot of leftists, which includes a lot of people of the Jewish persuasion, have something which is called cute aversion. Which is when they observe something which is cute by conventional definition, something whose facial proportions approach that of a baby. And babies, of course, have a distinct facial proportions from adults because our eyes do not grow throughout our entire lifetimes. They're the same size throughout, but our heads do. So babies have the big eyes, and babies are, of course, bald. They have different facial proportions. What's the joke? Every baby looks like Mussolini. Thank God for that because, that Il Duce was a handsome man. And when these particular proportions, facial proportions, when you put them on anything, people just find it cute. Now, part of the reason why we keep cats as pets and we find bears and bunnies cute is because they have similar facial proportions to babies. And so you can never really be permanently angry at a cat because they'll just look at you with those eyes. And we call them puppy dog eyes for a reason. They just disarm human being. Would you be angry at a baby, genuinely angry for peeing all over you? Not really. So, but a minority of people, and this includes a lot of people on the left and a lot of Jews, have something which is called cute aversion. And this is reaction of disgust and aggression when they witness something cute. They literally want to kill cute things. So think of someone who, when faced with a very cute kitten, would kick it. Someone who faced with a baby would feel disgust at it. Or someone when faced with, an anime girl used as an avatar on Twitter would shriek, "Anime avatar! Anime avatar!" People who just dislike cute things and have a nasty, violent reaction to them. They dislike babies, they dislike kittens, and they dislike anime girls. So it's something to keep in mind with the a leftist obsession with abortion, which just how much they love it. We should be able to talk about abortion, you know, think about it as an act. But these people enjoy it, and they enjoy contemplating it. They enjoy talking about it. They enjoy the women boast about the abortions they've had.
That's, what a bunch of bunny boilers.
I'm sorry?
Anybody brag about that as a bunny boiler?
Yeah, I actually know people who brag about having tortured animals. And they're not...
The things I want to do to people do that? Oh, I can't even describe that.
I want to do to them what they did to the animals, to be honest. I know if... He's not a friend. He's an enemy, actually. Now that I think about it. I know a guy who used to trap cats and put...
No, I can't hear this. Please.
Okay. Yeah, he did some very nasty things to cats. Now he's working for the police, so you can... Think of the kind of person this person is. Nah, real piece of work. Anyways, I saw it as a little bit of a speculation from our friend Thultide, and respect if you're listening. I think you are. And you should all visit his blog. You get nuggets like this, like people with shrunken amygdalae. And of course, the RK selection theory comes into this. Our friend Anonymous Conservative, who pointed out that actually leftists do have shrunken amygdalae, and so do a surprising number of Jews, which tells you something about the character of that tribe. And the amygdala is, of course, an organ within the brain which regulates fear and anxiety and things like that. So if it's shrunken, people cannot regulate their fear. They're very neurotic types, and they feel disgust with. And of course, sociopaths have almost microscopic amygdalae. So that is problematic. That is, these people, their brains are different. Their brains are just different from ours, I guess.
And I understand that amygdala also regulates danger recognition.
Yeah, that is, I almost forgot that, but that is a big factor in leftism. They literally may not be able to see dangers, which are to us as the plain as the nose is on our faces. And and of course, I mentioned that sociopaths have very small amygdalae. This is why they're so prone to reckless behavior. Danger as such, as a category, might be entirely invisible to them. So that's interesting at the very least. So
being felony stupid. Felony stupid.
Well, I don't think they're all stupid in the sense that they have low IQ, but yeah, being unable to perceive danger and therefore be reckless, yeah, that would be a form of stupid, I think. Well, I think we exhausted that subject. Would you agree, Bo?
Indeed, I agree. I actually wrote about RK selection and all that, similar topics, some return things.
Well, can you elucidate a little bit for us? Because I may have missed something in my very, very, very brief elevator pitch on RK selection in amygdalae.
Also, another feature is reproductive patterns. So the main one is the RK selection is the R types, sort of more the herbivores. In the K's more like the carnivores. So if you compare rabbits and wolves, and rabbits just have lots of little bunnies, and wolves have smaller families, and they invest more in them. And kind of the comparison, well, you kind of see some of the parenting that you'll find in the bad neighborhoods compared to the way we do things.
Right. Well, it is. And a lot of people have said that we need to make more white babies, and we should. We should have more children as a race, but I am not sure we can fuck our way out of this, people, because no matter how many children we make, the other race is just going to make more. That's just something they do. They are more R-selected. We are more K-selected as a race, for the most part. I mean, excepting the Asians, excepting specifically the East Asians, the Chinese, the Koreans, and the Japanese, the other Asians less so. But, you know, we cannot outbreed them because our phenotypical maximum of child numbers is, I think, lower than their 50%. So that's, you know, not a valid strategy. When we are talking about restoring white homelands, we are always talking about repatriation. I don't see any other path towards it. We cannot just have more children as a race, because that's, I don't think we are biologically capable of having 15 children. You know, white men want to care for children. White women want to care for children. White men want to mentor their sons. This is something which has been forgotten, obviously, because so few people actually have children, or, you know, they have two children. Both are girls. So who are you going to mentor? Who are you going to induct into male society? That's a big problem for us.
Well, so, the family size used to be a lot larger back in the pioneer days.
Yeah, but it
so
was never.
Now it's affluenza, right? So.
It was never third world levels. You know, if you let these people breed, and that, like they do in Africa, they have like how many, 15, 20 children. In the pioneer days, I mean, they had, you know, 12 children tops. That's a. Their children mature faster. So eventually these people will have to be removed to spaces of their own.
We gotta keep up as best we can.
We should keep up, but we should not have illusions that, you know, breeding is a race we can win. The white man was when the white man was dominant, we were, you know what, 15% of the world's population, and yet we ruled the world.
We were 30%, actually 40% of the Victorian days.
No, that's too high. I don't think the white percentage of the population of the entire world. I don't think the white percentage of the population ever rose above 20. I think 19 was the, maybe 18 was the absolute peak. In any case, 40, that's too high.
According to that, that's what I've seen, but anyway. I just looked into closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anyways, are the white way of doing things, the K-selected way of doing things, you have fewer children. Now, when I say fewer, I don't mean two. I don't mean three, right? And you invest a lot in them, in their upbringing, in their education, in their feeding and clothing and cleaning. So you basically make them the best they can be, the best men they can be. Specifically, this is very important for male children. Nurturing and direction is important for them. And this is how you win. You win by being the best, not by being many. And that's the white way of doing things. Whereas the rest of the world seem to prefer playing the numbers game. So we should not be playing the numbers game. We cannot win it. And we have another donation from Alaska Chaga, another diamond. Well, it's just a slow drip with you today, sir. Well, I'm not going to complain. It's more money for the cause, and that's very well appreciated. And of course, you can donate also through Entropy, aside from DLive, and we are greatly appreciative of those donations as well. And speaking of those donations over on Entropy, we have a $15 donation from Michael57DE. Maybe that stands for Deutschland. Hail Nix, hail Bo, hail the gods, hail our folk. Does this solve your number question? Ah, well, $15, they are greatly appreciated, but I do believe that the other conceptual half of the whole initiated by the number 14 is a different number. So I will quote the mushroom character from Super Mario and say, "Thank you, Michael 57DE, but your princess is in another castle." And that is the truth. That is the truth. So help me God. I believe we have more than exhausted the abortion subject, Bo.
Well, indeed, that's
Oh, sorry about that.
looks like you dropped out. Okay, so here we are back. All right.
That's all. I believe I've caught the curse of the boomer technology. I've been bad mouthing the boomers so much that they've pooled their spiritual energy together to turn me into one of their own when I'm running these shows. So a little embarrassing hiccup there, but I do believe we can continue. Am I coming in loud and clear?
I can hear you.
Yeah, that's good to know. That's good to know. We now have an article we should discuss by Mr. Thomas Steuben. It's called Total Recall, and it's concerning the absolute debacle of the Republican Party in California, where they were supposed to recall Gavin Newsom using magical Negro Larry Elder. But they failed. And they failed. Now, of course, there is the question of election fraud. There was probably some measure of election fraud in the California recall election. However, people have pointed out that most of the shenanigans are actually legal under California law, just as most of the shenanigans at the federal level in 2020 were such that they could not be proven or litigated for or against. So it would seem that this is another case of preparation winning out over anything else, especially for the Democrats. And of course, there's comments about the quality of candidate Larry Elder. He's of course not a white person, but he's not, at least not anti-white. So that's he's got that going for him. But we should not forget that the GOP establishment wanted Bruce Jenner. Now that Bruce fellow, he sometimes goes by Caitlin, but no, his name is Bruce. What's your opinion on all that, Bo? Now you're an American, so I guess you have more skin in the game than I do with regard to this.
California, it's a beautiful place, but in other ways it's kind of a mess.
It
As far
is.
as that recall action, yeah, there's definitely some funny stuff going on with the numbers. What's anybody going to do about it?
That's a very good question. Are the people who
I'm not even sure the Republicans care to play to win, you know? Remember that
that's
slogan back in 2016, lose with Cruz? What kind of a
I'm
slogan is
sorry.
that? Lose with
Lose
Cruz. Lose with Ted Cruz.
someone came up. Oh, surely it was, an opposition slogan.
Yeah, they didn't like Trump, so we're gonna have Ted Cruz, and he's gonna lose the election. Let's lose with Cruz.
People
What kind
who
of
were for Cruz came up with that.
against Trump?
Jesus Christ. I
Yeah,
don't
so they go
remember
against
that.
the party establishment was against their most popular candidate.
Don't
See how
think
they
Ted
play the game over
Cruz.
here?
I
We
don't.
have two parties. And they're both owned by the same people, and they both play funny with the primary elections. Make sure the one of the guys get favored by the deep state, and they've been playing the game since Woodrow Wilson. And Donald Trump is the only one who's gotten in otherwise. You see why they've gone absolutely berserk.
Wow. Lose with Cruz.
Yes.
Were they trying to humiliate Ted Cruz? I know he. I mean, I don't think he was their first choice. I think they wanted Jeb Bush, right? Cruz was always a little bit of a, I think, a little too libertarian for the establishment's liking. But who knows? Maybe it was a Hail Mary to derail the Trump presidency, the Trump candidacy, but. Maybe on the back end, they got some humiliation of Ted Cruz, which I don't know. I can't bring myself to hate Ted Cruz. You know, that's the thing. It's like he's strangely likable, I think. He's got that not likable like ultra-charismatic alpha males are, but he's got a little bit of that dorky likability. You know he's trying his best, and he's actually deep down a very big dork. But you can't help but root for him a little bit, like seeing a spider trying to stay away above water in the toilet bowl.
Good one.
I don't know. I get that sort of, yeah, this guy's a complete dork, but it would be nice if we could pretend he has a chance to win for a while. Not to him. See, that's the thing. Now I'm doing it. Now I'm humiliating Ted Cruz while actually feeling sympathy for him. So. That's something to think about, I guess. Wow, I did not know about that. I did not know about Lose with Cruz. I thought it was something, you know, shitlords or Trump people came up with just to mess with Cruz. But that's amazing. People who wanted Ted Cruz to win. That, right? Yeah.
Even if we lose, we don't care. We'll see, the people like Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz, they're nice and reliable, and the deep state types like them, and they're going to play ball.
That's
keep up with globalization and all that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So anyways, Thomas Steuben points out that, there was a big attempt to sway the elections, not just with the election fraud and election theft and all the various beautiful shenanigans, but there was an immense media campaign and pressure from the FBI openly interfering in the California recall election to prevent a recall of Gavin Newsom. And so I believe what's going on there is they correctly predicted that if they lose in California, if the Democrats lose in California, this could reverberate across the nation and encourage people to, basically elect Republicans. Now, I'm not sure how that could be better, but Gavin Newsom has in many ways made himself the face of the oppressive, authoritarian Democratic Party, especially with regard to a combination of incompetency and restrictive, you know, oppressive and onerous COVID measures. So maybe there is just a defeat in California would have meant a complete crushing of this entire Democrat agenda of COVID as authoritarianism.
That might be something to that, because otherwise, you know, there's really not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans, and that's what George Wallace said, and it's true now.
Well, if there is no difference, then really why should this be important to the dissident right? You think we should, as the dissident right, rise above these partisan politics, or are elections still something we should pay attention to?
Well, so as far as the major parties, well, like I say, you know, Donald Trump was the only one who wasn't one of the globalist approved ones. Mm-hmm. And so it's, we got the enemy, and we got the enemy-controlled opposition otherwise. Mm-hmm. And getting too wrapped up in the outcome of that, what sense does it make?
All right.
The ride might be
Maybe.
different, but the destination can be the same.
That's something to keep in mind every time people try to get you to support some Republican or other. These are not good people. They're not on your side. And who's to say they're not globalists themselves? I mean, even if they aren't initially globalists like Donald Trump, soon they will be turned and instrumentalized towards globalist ends. So it will be just as if you had voted for the globalist, except this guy will also lie to you. So I guess that's a bonus. He'll say all the right things. And I mean, I think the biggest disappointment of the Trump years wasn't so much that people are saying he was always a liar. Maybe he was. I don't know. I'm not up in his head. But I think it would be more scary if he wasn't, if he genuinely went to Washington with the wish to reform it all, to just stop globalism in its track, to maybe even slow it down. And the system proved powerful enough to defeat a sitting president. So that's, I would believe, the scarier option.
Well, the thing is with Trump is that he was only purple pilled. He wasn't really on our side, okay? So he was trying to get our jobs back, and well, if you're globalist, oh well, we can't have that.
Maybe Trump was a step in the right direction. Certainly, conceptually, it dislodged a lot of people from the purple pills of libertarianism and conservatism. I know I was dislodged from my libertarianism by the Trump campaign, so that's something to consider. And without Donald Trump, there would be no writer's block, because not just me, but also my friend and former co-host, Full Moon Ancestry, he was mobilized by the Trump campaign, if not red pilled by it. So I want to thank Donald Trump. He is an unexpected sponsor of the writer's block. He made a lot of the dissident right possible, and a lot of influx of new people, new ideas were made possible by the Trump campaign. So that's something to think about when we're insulting him and calling him a Zionist shill, which, let's not kid ourselves, he was, and he was from the get-go. You knew he was an Israel firster when you started calling him the God Emperor. And,
well, yeah, he's even softer on the JQ than I am, okay?
Yeah, I think he's opposite of soft. I think he's very hard on the JQ. He's just hard against us. He's hard for the Jews. He goes very hard for the Jews. And it is unfortunate. It is unfortunate, but that's life, as Frankie Blue Eyes put it. We have donations. Money is rolling into the coffers of countercurrents.com on Entropy from Love Hater. Oh, I hope you didn't miss yesterday's stream where Greg and Richard Hoke and Stephen Paul Foster were discussing, the solution to being accused of being a hater. I think it would be of particular interest to you, sir. And he says he donates $88. And
there we are. There we go. That's the number you wanted. Admit it.
Bingo, ding, 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 ding. The answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything is 88. That is the second conceptual half of which we were looking for from the start of the stream. It begins with a 14, ends with an 88. I believe we are talking to an awakened enough audience to know exactly what is being referenced there. And of course, we must secure an existence for our people and a future for white children. And I don't think there's anything controversial about saying that. I don't know why are people so scared of those 14 words, as they call them. It's really a wonderful thought, if only we could put it in practice. Well, thank you for that, sir. Thank you for the $88 and the completion of our conceptual whole. I think we can... unless we have something to add about the recall election. Well, do you have any particular opinion on the candidates, Bo? How much did you like Larry Elder, if you did?
I'm not too familiar with his work, but as far as I'm concerned, he's an okay guy. As far as Bruce Jenner, though, well, you know, he could sure talk better than I can.
I hear he was like a sports legend back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, won the Olympics, like 5 gold medals or something like that. He was on the Wheaties box. I don't know if you got those out there in Skopje, but, you know, that's a breakfast cereal.
Oh, he was an endorsing breakfast cereals?
Oh, yeah. There's pictures on the box and all that. And he's like a big champion, right? And in his older age, he decides, well, I'd rather be a chick.
Wow. Amazing. Well, I'm glad.
Strange rule, what can I say?
Yeah. There is a theory floating around. I think Steve Saylor is a big proponent of this. And in my experience, it's true. Transgenderism is essentially what happens when very high testosterone men, like professional athletes, start thinking of themselves as women, and it starts turning them on. It's basically a combination of autism, very high testosterone, and autogenophilia. So these guys are thinking of themselves fucking a female version of themselves, and they get aroused by the thought of them being a woman. So they transform themselves into women to realize, at least in part, this perverse sexual fantasy. And that's disturbing. I try to think of myself as a woman, and I'm drawing a complete blank. I don't know what a me woman... Well, actually, I do. It would look kind of like my mother, and I don't know how anyone could become aroused by a thought like that. And he's not the only top athlete to be drawn into transgenderism. He's not the only ridiculously high testosterone person to be drawn into transgenderism. Steve Saylor pointed out when there was a military historian who had come out as transgender, as like, it's always people with these ridiculously left-wing professions, athlete, mathematician, military historians, you know, professions which are total sausage fests. Why are these extremely high testosterone men becoming transgender? Might it be that extreme high testosterone correlates with, you know, the autistic super male brain and the accordant perversions of autogenophilia? Who knows? But it is definitely a strange mindset to have, this transgenderism. It is, I think we should read more, not only scientific literature, but I think I'm going to delve into Ovid, into his Metamorphoses, for answers. Have you any thoughts on what could, you know?
Well, kind of really long, complicated discussion here. Mm. I think the transgender phenomenon is really several causes. So in one case, there, you know, really are some people who've got some flip bits up in the brain, you know, and they're biologically one way, they think they're another way. Possibly through a developmental influence or something like that. But there's a much larger amount of people who are just caught onto this as a fashion, especially in recent times. Now, yeah. When I was a kid, I don't know anybody who was a boy and thought he was a girl or the other way. But these days, it's like coming out of the woodwork.
I think in many cases, especially when it's quote unquote children becoming transitioning, becoming trans, as they put it, it's actually the influence of their mothers who want to have a special child, and they'll go to any lengths to do it. And these, I think they call them awful affluent white female liberals. They will turn their children into transgenders just to feel special. And I believe the loss of male authority here is paramount to these decisions. Because what man would consent to his son or daughter becoming infertile, becoming a freak, essentially? Because that's the thing, when you quote-unquote transition, you know, if you're a man, you do not become a woman. You become a eunuch in a wig. That's the thing. You're not a woman. You cannot get pregnant. You cannot have children. You're not, you cease being a sexual being. You cannot, you know, you lose reproductive capacity. You're a freak. You've transformed yourself into a freak. Congratulations. That's
actually, I've read about this on Return of Kings. I got a couple articles about that. And this is being encouraged. This is cultural Marxism working here.
Yeah. It is. It is encouraged. It is encouraged in children and also in their mothers, which
Kevin
is.
Kevin Kern has some articles about that as well, and well, you might not be surprised that he's behind some of this. I'm going to give you three guesses. I'm not going to tell you, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I think I understand. I think it's a morbid yet fascinating subject, transgenderism. You see,
but people who think ugly babies are ugly, right? Those people.
Yeah, the people who think who have a visceral disgust reaction towards babies think that Bruce Jenner is stunning and brave. Let that sink the fuck in. That's We haven't. That's one of these. Well, transgenders seem to always crop up. Not just, I mean, gender-bending things, hermaphrodites, always seem to crop up when a civilization is in terminal decline. So borders are being dissolved between everything. Borders between nations, borders between public and private, borders between man and woman, between male and female, and borders between truth and lies, between law and anarchy. Just things are thrown into complete disorder as empires fall, and it does not bode well at all for the West that this rage of transgenderism is transgenderism is all the rage. The age of transgenderism is the age of empire collapse. And of course, many of us feel victimized by the empire, but in the end, empire collapse is rarely pretty. We might not survive this, not all of us, at least. So that's something to think about.
Yeah, you might be familiar with a fellow by the name of Juvenal from Rome. Mm-hmm. He's a satirist. He was talking about some of that.
Yeah, I personally had my education about the historical phenomenon of about historical transgenderism from Camille Paglia. And of course, she calls herself a liberal. She calls them very interesting, very fun. But points out that they always appear in the, not even decadent, but the degenerate stages of civilization. And it's, you know, they herald the collapse of the empire. And so does female empowerment. We do actually know that part of the reason why the Abbasid Caliphate collapsed, and of course many subsequent caliphates were just lost their power before even fighting the Christians and the Mongols. A lot of the Islamic caliphates embraced a form of feminism, which led to female judges, female imams, female everything. And of course, right after they did that, they got their asses handed to them by the Crusaders and later the Mongols. So that's another thing to think about historically. Women becoming powerful and transgenders rising in society heralds the fall of empires.
Yeah, one might even think about them as being on the Natoid spectrum. Not sure if you've heard of that.
I'm sorry, and, I did not hear you.
It's possible to think of them as Natoids. There's sort of an old term for people who are kind of half crazy and given to radicalism.
I'm not sure. I don't think that they are of course given to radicalism because changing your gender is a radical thing, but it is a lot of it could be biological. Of course, here we are on the writer's block, we are aware of Dr. Edward Dutton's theories that basically political radicalism, as we understand, you know, especially coming from the left, is a product of, well, genetic mutation, people who are mutants. And I believe you have written on this subject as well, that leftist radicals are literal mutants and matoid freaks. What's a matoid?
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning, the half crazy types. Have just enough together to stay out of the loony bin most of the time, but still the thinking is deeply disturbed. And either something genetic is going on or developmental. And, you know, these people really need guidance, but, you know.
That's another thing.
They get in charge of things. They end up, you know.
Another thing we should.
Sick as like Lenin.
I'm sorry?
They end up like being folks like Lenin.
They end up following some ultra charismatic person who promises them everything, especially feeling normal, which they never can. But I will point out, you said they would be usually kept in asylums, but in the 80s, I believe America emptied its asylums because apparently it wasn't fair to keep people confined against their will. That was not liberal. That was not nice. So a lot of people who actually need round-the-clock psychiatric care are not receiving it in America.
That was another wonderful thing that the Supreme Court did.
Yeah. Well, let's hear it for the Supreme Court. Whoop-tee-doo. Inflicted all of these crazy people on America. Maybe explain why we have less of the transgender problem in Europe. Because we still keep our mad in madhouses here, right? I mean, the right of the state to declare someone a threat to themselves and others is still very inviolate in Europe. And it is, you know, rigorously enforced because, let's face it, the mad are threats to primarily themselves, also to others, but primarily themselves. And if we're not willing to throw them off the cliff like the Spartans, then we should take care of them as society. So that's something to think about. A lot of people who are running around being liberal and cutting their dicks off would have been in insane asylums in the 80s. We have...
Yeah, there's a feminist by the name of Kate Millett, and she really had some problems, and she was spearheading this movement for deinstitutionalization. And yeah, they took it to the Supreme Court, got it the way they wanted, and all these state hospitals were emptied out. And they just hit the streets and became homeless. It's terrible what happened.
That is maybe a subject deserving of its own live stream. I believe, what's her name? The YouTube girl, Aiden Paladin. Did a very long video, like an hour and some minutes, on the subject of mental asylums, and it's worth watching. Just type in Aiden Paladin mental asylums into YouTube and it should pop right up, unless she's been banned on YouTube, in which case all her wisdom has been lost like teardrops in the rain. Just thinking about that Roy Batty speech all month. Oh, yeah. I guess. Well, we have donations. We have lemons on DLive. We have 4 ice cream from Gadius Maximus and 1 ice cream from Bartleby. Oh, I believe our super mods are working as a team to present some strange inverted symbol, maybe. Who knows? We'll never know, I guess. Flynn Photo donates a diamond and says, Rome is burning. Camille Paglia is right. Yes, she is. She's a very wise woman, even though she is a liberal lesbian. I guess there's an exception to every rule. Rome is indeed burning, and no, this time it's not going to be rebuilt. It was many, 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 many years before Rome was rebuilt after it was put to the sword and the fire. You know, that's a Latin pun. It was destroyed with iron and fire by the Visigoths. So that's something to think about, something to think about as we inhabit the ruins of the empire. And do we have any more donations? Nope. That's all for the donations on entropy. Now, one last article I wanted to discuss was Aspirational Negritude by Sean Bell. That's very interesting. For once, it does not concern the well-being of white people in the late-stage decaying empire, but the well-being of non-whites. How, even though they may look to be the beneficiaries of this obviously anti-white regime, ultimately they too are being ground down into the faceless, characterless goop which the globalists intend for humanity to become one day. And Aspirational Negritude says that non-whites of every race, of every nation, of every creed, they come to America and they become niggers. He describes how two of his friends, childhood friends growing up, one of them Honduran, the other Arab, they called each other niggers. They dressed like niggers. They acted like niggers. Centuries, millennia even of proud Honduran and Arab heritage, you know, Catholicism, Islam, ground down into nothing, into American negritude. Now that's disturbing. You know, you feel for the non-whites who have this inflicted upon them, even as they inflict their iniquities upon white people in America. It's actually one of the best articles I've read on countercurrents, period. That's what's so interesting about it. And it's not even about white well-being. What were your impressions, Bo?
Well, that was a really sad one there. A Palestinian fellow and ended up dying young.
Right.
Just taken away by the crime.
It's also
as far as the culture, you know, everybody has to understand, not just us, that what the globalists want to do is just make everybody just identical little serfs of theirs, destroy every ancient culture and tradition, make it mean nothing. That's what the stakes are.
It is something that awaits all nations and all cultures and all races unless we do something. Now, they may come for white people first and they might weaponize the resentment that non-whites feel for us, but ultimately they will destroy them too. I don't know if it's something that these people understand. I think some blacks may realize it, some Mexicans, some Arabs. I believe people like Marcus Garvey, who was a black separatist, understood that his people are going to lose their distinctiveness if they remained in America, at some level at least. But I do not see a lot of pushback against globalism from non-whites. Of course, we might not be looking in the right places. There's always selection bias. You know, we do interact most of the time with fellow dissident rightists, and we might not have a good idea of what the non-whites are talking. Even if we are observing white liberals and white conservatives, we are not observing non-whites. Many times we do not speak their languages. I mean, I understand Spanish. I cannot speak it. I understand a little bit of it. So, but I do not follow Spanish language media, so I wouldn't be able to tell you what Hondurans think about, you know, the erasure of their culture and grinding down to globalism. Another way in which I loved the article, because it draws on personal experience and really, you know, gritty personal experience. A lot of people he knows, they're like, they fall in with a bad crowd. He is obviously growing up in a majority non-white neighborhood, but in a sense, you know, he's adapting. I guess it makes him tough. It makes him aware of the racial realities of the world, unlike so many white children, which grow up in lily white neighborhoods and then assume that everyone in the world is just like, you know, other, just like white people. An assumption I foolishly made, you know, having grown up in a homogenous country in a homogenous neighborhood. And I didn't really even feel white until I went to, you know, first Egypt and then surprisingly Paris.
Going to Paris subway for the first time, just fresh off the plane. It's like, where are all the French people?
Yeah. That's a very good question. The French people are those not trying to assault you on the subway. That's a good rule of thumb for Paris. Although that, you know, I think I may have met the last French woman in Paris. It was a memorable night. Anyways, it's one of those things like people who grow up, I guess, poorer, I guess, cannot afford to move out of their non-white neighborhoods. They are nevertheless the richer for it in red pills, in the reality of non-white behavior. And this is actually a very good look into non-whites in America, that they too are suffering the culture death disease. So, I mean, maybe I think there is a Jewish proverb with regard to the trouble of others is half a consolation. I don't know if it's true here, but I'm definitely sorry for these non-white people losing their culture and being ground down into aspirational negritude. I know I see a lot of it in the Balkans. It's one of these things, like in the Balkans, because we didn't have colonial empires here in the Balkans, well, not in recent memory, I think a lot of people do not really think of themselves as European. You know, they relate more to maybe the Arabs, maybe the blacks, and there is a lot of wiggerdom. A lot of people behave like they're black.
You don't have anybody pretending they're gypsies, do you?
No, thank God. Let me just cross myself just in case. But yeah, a lot of people, I mean, and part of it is because they look at rap on American television or right now through the internet, and it is presented as the cool thing to be. So everyone acts like niggers. But this goes really far back, I would say, to the 80s. And that's something which I strongly dislike.
Yeah, back to that liquid manure quote from Solzhenitsyn, right?
We should have built the curtain much higher, and we should have built it out of stronger material. Iron proved not strong enough.
Right? Yeah, the thing is, though, you know, a lot of that's, you know, the cultural Marxism that is being exported to us, and it, you know, it took on a life of its own, and then the tidal wave comes back.
That is always a possibility. No, that's the thing. I mean, when the communist authorities were ruining our culture, they were crushing it underfoot in the 40s and 50s. You know, these were the methods they used. They would ritualistically humiliate us. They would present us as fools and buffoons in the media people were supposed to consume. And they would glorify the other. You know, they would use it as a cudgel to beat you over the head. That's how it's done. Well, I believe we have less than a minute of this show left. And let me just quickly read the donations left. We have 2 lemons from Alaska Chaga, and we have 7 ice cream from Alaska Chaga. Once again, avail yourself of that man's great services. Purchase his Chaga. It's very restorative. It's very delicious too. And there will soon be soap with which you can get yourself a good cleanse. And I'm pretty sure it's good on the skin. And this has been the Writer's Block. I want to thank Bo for being with me today and doing the month in review show. There will be one month in review show on the first Saturday of the next month. On the Writer's Block every month. So the next month in review show is scheduled for October the 7th, where we will do, November the 7th, when we will be doing October in review. And Bo, have you anything to add before I end the broadcast?
Well, maybe one of these days you can do that Macedonian pumpkin fart trick.
Well, that is just a metaphor, but I will do try well, to I obtain. Know. Yeah, I will try to.
I'm sure
obtain...
it'd be popular, right? Sure, that would be very popular, right?
I have been informed by the Countercurrents legal team that I'm not allowed to shave, display my stuffed animals, or fart into a pumpkin on stream. Oh, okay. So, unfortunately, that will not happen. But I will maybe release it as a private video on my Telegram for my adoring fans. I will obtain a pumpkin for Halloween and fart into it. And, of course, you will be welcome to fart into my pumpkin whenever it is possible, whenever coronavirus restrictions are lifted, because that indicates we are of the same ideology in metaphorical terms, obviously. Now, this has been the Writer's Block Month in Review with Mr. Bo Albrecht, who is now part of the Writer's Block Salon family. Thank you for that, sir. I want to thank our moderators. I want to thank Gaius Maximus and Bartleby for absolutely dominating the chat and keeping it free from any interference from bad faith actors, Spurs, federal agents, and other types of perverse, spiteful mutants. I want to thank everyone who donated. I want to thank our unofficial sponsor, Alaska Chaga. Buy his tea, buy his soap. And this has been the Writer's Block. Thank you, kind sirs. Thank you for everything. Bye-bye.